If you're upset because of someone else, boss, whatever it is, that means you have no power to change it. Hey everybody, welcome to a unique Think Your Way to an Epic Life. Unique in a couple ways. One is we have a unique setting. You can see the beautiful mountains behind me in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And two is we don't have a guest today. Today, I'm just gonna be talking about a book that I really like and I really am trying to get people to read. So that's what today's podcast is all about. I have no ulterior motive here other than to help you and the people who are around you have happier lives. And this book impacted me, and so many people have referred the book to. This probably sounds like it's a commercial and I'm selling the book and I'm getting commission. And the truth is I'm not getting a dime, even though the author is a really good friend of mine. He doesn't know he's a good friend of mine, but one of these days it will happen. Have you noticed that the world's a little bit negative lately? It's a little bit more so than normal. At least it feels that way to me. And so because of that, we need to arm ourselves with as much information we can to reprogram our brains to be happy. And so the happiness advantage, here's the deal. There is a price to pay for success. And in this case, the price to pay is $15. You have to pay $15 to buy a book that a man who went to Harvard, taught at Harvard, and wrote a book about everything he learned for 12 years, you can buy it for 15 bucks. Because I have the honor and privilege of coaching some of the top business owners in the country, I get questions a lot from friends, people who know what I do for a living, and they just want to know. They're, hey, coach, what could I do that doesn't cost me an arm and a leg that would really help change my life? And so I ask them some questions. Now, if you go ask a really good life coach that exact question, they will ask you questions. Instead of giving you a pat answer, they're going to ask you, what one thing, and guys, listen to this question and answer this for yourself. What one thing, if you were to make just small changes to make it better, would make every other area of your life better? And so you may say, you know, it was when I was a runner. When I was a runner, life was good. Everything was working for me. I think that's what I'm going to do is I'm going to start running. Well, then that coach might work with you and say, okay, so when can we get it into your calendar? Where are you going to do it? Do you have the equipment, right? And they'll just get you set up for it. And you agree to everything. 3 months goes by. You're at the grocery store. You're in line. And that coach that was nice enough to take their time and tell you the steps to take pulls their grocery cart right in behind you. And you kind of go, oh, hi, coach. And they say, hey, how's that running thing going? And you just kind of have to hang your head down and say, you know, I was going to start and just life got in the way. Well, my goal for you is that you don't let that happen today. That you take action now, today. Stop the podcast, buy the book, right? Actually take some action towards making your life better and your family's lives better. So the question is, do you want to be happy? Of course, everyone says, yes, of course I want to be happy. However, most people are not willing to pay the price of admission. See, the truth is there are no overnight successes. Sorry. It doesn't happen quickly. What it takes is a whole lot of really boring steps, a whole bunch of times over and over and over again until you finally get there. One of the things that was really fascinating about this book that I learned is that positive psychology did not come into effect until 1998. So prior to 1998, the only thing that psychology did was it studied what was wrong, people who were extreme and needed extreme help. But it did not study anything about how to make life better. And so in 1998, that's when Sean Acor got to meet three mentors, and they were kind of at the founding of the positive psychology movement. Sean Acor wanted to study the outliers on the happiest happy people, the people that they take out of the studies because they're so different. He studied those people to help us be able to learn how to do it for ourselves. And so I really need you to feel that you need to read this book for yourself. A lot of the times people don't think about the impact that they have on other people. If you go into a room and you're really down and depressed, you're bringing the people that are in that room down with you. If you go into a room and you're really happy and excited about life, you're bringing those people in the room up with you. And so I know that you love your friends. I know that you love your family. Do you love them enough to take a look at how you really are impacting them? Because you may think you're not, but if you have an energy that is down and negative, they feel it. I can assure you, they feel it. Even if you try and fake it and put a smile on, they can feel it. And so this book is a really fabulous starting point to learning how to retrain your brain to do what it's supposed to do so that you can be happy. Without further ado, here's my take on just the intro chapters. I didn't get into the whole book. I just got into the intro in hopes that it would spark your interest enough that you could actually enjoy this book. He says that most people follow a pattern and they say, when I'm successful, then I'll be happy. Or when I accomplish this, then I'll be happy. Or when this happens, then I'll be happy. And the truth is, that is a broken paradigm. It doesn't work that way. In more than a decade of positive psychology and neuroscience has proven in no uncertain terms that the formula actually works the other way around. Once you are happy, then you will be successful. In Paradise Lost, John Milton wrote, "A mind is a place of its own, and in itself can make a heaven of hell and a hell of heaven." Think about that just for a minute. You have control over your mind. You might not feel like you do sometimes, but there are ways to get control. And you could be in a wonderful, let me tell you a story. My husband and I took a Hawaiian cruise in 2000, and it was our first and only cruise. And the cruise line was, the ship was brand new. It was a Norwegian cruise line. We're in Hawaii. Everything is perfect. And you would think that people couldn't be in a bad mood in a place like that. Well, the people in the cabin right next to us screamed and yelled and fought the entire time. And so they made a hell of heaven. And we do that ourselves all the time. And so we have to learn a little bit more about it. Listen to the quote again. "A mind is its own place, and in itself can make a heaven of hell and a hell of heaven." In 2004, as many as 4 out of 5 Harvard students suffered from depression in the past year. That's 80% suffered from depression. 50% suffered from depression so severe that it was completely debilitating to them. And I'm sure that that's probably pretty surprising to some of you because you think of someone going to Harvard as someone who's living an advantaged life, that lives a life that's so much better than everyone else. And those numbers are pretty horrifying. 80% in the last year had suffered from depression. And so when we judge other people and we look in their lives and we think that we know what's going on, we're usually completely off base. Depression rates right now worldwide are 10 times higher than they were in 1960, 10 times higher. Only 45% of workers surveyed are happy in their jobs, and that's the lowest ranking since polling began. This last statistic that I'm going to report to you from his book was just really, really hard to hear. The median age of onset of depression has come down almost half. And the age now that it starts is 14 years old on average. And I know there's kids that are younger, but the average age being 14 is pretty horrifying. So Sean set out to study the outliers. He wanted to find the people that were the most happy. He had 3 real powerful mentors that had started this positive psychology in 1998. So those were his mentors at Harvard. And usually in science, they remove the outliers. That's really how it's done. However, he wants to know what makes the happiest the happiest. In 1998, there was a 17-to-1 ratio of studies performed about people in bad psychological conditions and only 1 about how to be more positive. So 17-to-1. And you wonder why people wanted to avoid the psychiatrist back then. In 2006, Sean was asked to design and teach a course called Positive Psychology at Harvard. They weren't real optimistic about the course. They were hoping maybe 100 students would sign up and show up. And when the professors walked into that room, they were stunned. There were over 1,000 people that were there. And that's 1 in 7 Harvard students. So they were starved. They were starved for happiness. They're just driven, 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 and they were really looking hard for that. So several of the students that did not go through the happiness studies, what they would do is they would get really, really stressed out completely, and they would back themselves away from all their friends and all their support, and they would think, I have too much to do, I can't see anybody, I can't be with anybody, and they would go away from their support system that they really needed so desperately. Countless studies have shown that social relationships are the best predictor of health and well-being and lower stress than anything else. They're both an antidote for depression and a prescription for high performance. So we know what they are, but still, instead of bringing people into you, do you push them away when you need them the most? I know I've been guilty of that. Countless studies in neuroscience show that it works the other way around. We become more successful when we're happier and more positive. Check this out, this study. Doctors that were put in a positive state of mind before they went in to diagnose a patient, they had 3 times more creativity and intelligence than doctors in a neutral state, and they were able to diagnose 19% faster. Here's another one that's mind-blowing. Optimistic people outsell their pessimistic counterparts by 56%. That's huge. If the salesperson's making $75,000, and he's the pessimist, that means the optimist is going to make $117,000. So happiness literally pays. Turns out that our brains are wired to work better when they're in positive, not when they're in neutral or negative. Studies conclusively showed that the way to high achievement is not single-minded focus on work, 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 work. It's also not to bark orders at employees. Kind of the opposite works. Sean was able to isolate 7 different specific actionable patterns that predict success and achievement. I'm going to give all 7 to you, but please keep in mind, these are the headlines. You've got to pick up the book to really understand them. So number 1 is the title of the book, The Happiness Advantage. Because positive brains have a biological advantage over brains that are neutral or negative, this principle teaches us how to retrain our brains to capitalize on positivity and improve our productivity and performance. Everyone's heard of the bestseller, Think and Grow Rich. Think and Grow Rich. And in that book, Napoleon Hill said, both poverty and riches are the offspring of thought. And that might seem a little harsh if you're running into poverty and hearing this, but it should be encouraging, because if you can change the way you think, you can change the reality of your life. And I am walking, living proof of that. Number 2 is the fulcrum and the lever. How we experience the world and how we live in it constantly changes because of our mindset. This principle teaches us how we can adjust our mindset so that our fulcrum, or the way that gives us power, is to be more fulfilled and successful. Would you agree that most of what we see and hear in the world right now, especially if you watch the news, is negative? Well, when we have that much negative coming in at us, we have to counterbalance it. And so you could turn your car into a university on wheels. You should be listening to podcasts, listening to audiobooks, whatever you can, listening to really happy, positive music, whatever works for you to bring you up, do it. Take those little bitty steps, just one more, as Ed Milet would say, just one more, do one more little thing. Now, 3 is the Tetris effect. So if you've ever played Tetris, you know that you kind of like start seeing the blocks everywhere in your head. And so it's what you focus on expands. So when our brains get stuck in a negative pattern that's looking for what's wrong, we bring about what we think about. And that really is very provable scientifically. Number 4 is falling up. Every one of us is going to get knocked down repeatedly. That's part of life, is you're going to get knocked down. At what point do you tell a baby to stop learning how to walk? You're going to tell the baby they keep learning, they keep getting up, and they keep falling down. And that's part of the deal. But instead of falling down, Sean talks about falling up. So in the midst of defeat and stress and crisis, our brains map out a way to make it easier for us. So this principle is about finding the mental path that not only leads us up out of failure and suffering, but it teaches us to be happier and more successful because of it. Then number five is the Zorro circle. So when challenges loom and we get overwhelmed and our rational brains get hijacked, totally hijacked by emotions, this principle teaches us how to regain control by focusing first on the small manageable goal and then gradually expanding our circle to where we can handle more. So if you were fortunate enough to see that movie, Zorro, it was really, really well done. And in the movie, Antonio Banderas was playing the young Zorro, and he was exuberant, and he was good. He was talented, but he wasn't good enough to be Zorro. And so Anthony Hopkins, the older gentleman, was teaching him, and he came in and he had him stand still, and Zorro stood still, and Anthony Hopkins went around him with his sword, and he drew a circle in the dirt around him. And he said, "This is what you have to master. This is what you cannot fight outside of this circle. Until you can be in this circle and completely master the circle, you can't go." Well, what Sean is trying to get us to do through this book is to master our circle. What can you control? I know I can only control my mindset and my actions. Sean is challenging us to draw that circle around ourselves and do that work on ourselves. Here's the part about it that is really freeing. See, if you're in a bad mood because of the cashier at the store, or the guy driving in front of you, or your husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, significant other, if you're upset because of someone else, boss, whatever it is, that means you have no power to change it. You can't be upset because of them. You have got to think of things differently and take 100% control and 100% responsibility for your experience of life. It really is very freeing. Number six is the 20-second rule. So sustaining lasting change, man, that really feels impossible, because our willpower is truly limited. And when the willpower fails, we fall back on our old tendencies and our old bad habits, and we succumb to the path of least resistance. This principle shows how making just small energy changes can absolutely replace your bad habits with good ones. Wouldn't that be cool? How many of you have a couple bad habits you would love to trade in for some good ones just like that? Number seven, which is the last one, but it's certainly not the least important, according to Sean, it is probably the most important, and that is social investment. So in the midst of challenges and stress, we talked about it a little bit earlier, some people choose to hunker down. They want to go and retreat within themselves. However, the very most successful people, they call in the troops. They call their friends, their family, their peer. They tell them, "I'm going through something right here." And they get through it so much better. Guys, the principle teaches how to invest in our greatest predictor of success and happiness, which is our social network. And so, you know, ask yourself, what am I doing? Who am I giving to? If you feel like your social network isn't strong enough, what can you do for someone else, right? That's how to win friends and influence people, is get interested in them, and then they will become interested in you. So together, these seven principles that Sean wrote the rest of the book about, is these seven principles. They've helped Harvard students. They've helped teens. They've helped tens of thousands of business people, because now Sean goes and he speaks. That's how I saw him. He came and spoke in Austin at family reunion for Keller Williams. And so I read his book before, and then I saw him, and I've read his book several times since then. One of these days I will meet him, and then you can accuse me of having an ulterior motive, but you will really love the book. Guys, I hope you've gotten enough to make you want to read the book. Ben will put some links in down below. Hope you enjoyed this podcast. Please let us know what you'd like to hear more of. Put a comment, and please subscribe. We need subscribers. Thanks.